connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for the computer today.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
Hello, I'm the Nostalgia Surfer Pro. I remember old internet memes, so you don't have to. I'm Matthew Marissa.
And of course, as is traditional, the co-host, Galen.
Galen Kara,
yep, that's pretty good.
I need you to know that we've made the connection between Galen and Linkara in the past on our own time.
Yeah.
Just like amongst friends.
Unfortunately, yes, we have.
You even own, like, a Trilby.
I do. I did, admittedly.
You owned a Trilby.
Owned previously. Past tense. The past tense is important.
Well, everyone who had a Trilby needs to get owned at some point.
True.
So, but the thing is, today, there's something completely unexpected appeared a few days ago. I think yesterday, in my subscription inbox on YouTube.
Yeah, there's been a new release. Blindsided, like, runner, like, you know, sudden late arrival to the surprise of the year category for the NetSurfies.
Spoiler alert for the NetSurfies this year. But it's Fesh Pints of Blair 3.
Part 1.
Part 1 of 2. Or more. It could be more. So, okay. Here's the rundown. Fesh Pints of Blair 1 and 2 are YouTube poops created by Krobo Productions, while he was under a different username that I'm not going to say. But they have become, like, internet canon. Like they are some of the most well-known YouTube poops, most quoted YouTube poops, most popular YouTube poops, even after, you know, years have passed. Fesh Pints 1 came out 10 years ago. Fesh Pints 2 came out 9 years ago.
God, that's insane.
There is about, like, 3 other YouTube poops made by Krobo in the meantime, but they have been inactive for a long time. But then suddenly Fesh Pints 3 this year just dropped, and it feels like we never left.
Yeah, it's, oh man, it is exactly as if it was just sort of made, like, another year after. It is clearly, like, higher quality. They have clearly, you know, been doing work in those last 9 years, but my God, just YouTube poops are so wonderful in general.
Yeah.
Like, they're worthy of their own topic, but the ideal YouTube poop is so wonderful, and Fesh Pints are so incredibly important to the internet as a whole that it was so nice seeing it back. And, like, yeah, it's got all the hits. It's got, you know, the Krobo keeps
here.
It
yeah.
relatively, like, contained to, like, you know, one big reference to previous stuff every now and again.
Let me sideline your rambling for
a
second.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to give some context here. So we're not going to explain what YouTube poops are because that'll take too much time, and we kind of did that in the TF2 episode, in the Mama Luigi episode. So if you're interested, go check those out. But so Krobo was sort of, I think he's one of the goats of YouTube poop.
Yeah.
There was, early on, I think there were 3 main names that people really were driven to, that were really popular, which were Deeper Cut, Walrus Guy, and Krobo Productions. Then they also had a lot of other friends that they collaborated with, like Captain Pan and Guy Safari, who were also commonly sort of considered goated among sort of that circle. I remember it specifically because those three, Deeper Cut, Walrus Guy, and Krobo, all made YouTube poops of the Sonic Dude rant on, like, the same week. And it was, like, this whole thing of, like, wait, all of them are using, like, the same source here. But Krobo's style is, for one thing, he's always been very edgy, and I think this leads to some jokes that do not really do well today. Freddy Ruined Sam's Life is a fantastic YouTube poop, except for, like, one line.
Yeah.
And, like, it was the internet in the 2000s. Like, you can't really excuse it. I think the other thing is I don't know Krobo's race.
Also true. You can't excuse it. You also have to put it in context of the time.
Yeah, it's one of those. There's a lot of internet edgy things that, like, the people aren't bad people because they were probably, like, children or teenagers when they made it. And they were edgy on the internet when that was, like, a standard. There's a lot of environmental factors to consider when talking about these things, which is why It's sort of a disclaimer we bring up whenever we talk about things from the 2000s like that.
Yeah, let those who are without sin cast the first stone, that's all I will say.
But I think what Krobo is really sort of good at in their style is they use a lot of repetition, but not in the way most people do in YouTube poops. Instead of doing stammering, they will do, like, looping sentences. The most notable one I can think of in Fresh Prince 1 is, "Boys, let me tell you something about women. Something about women." Or, yeah. "With over 100% of the district's reporting, Philip Banks has defeated the district's reporting." Like, they are using an earlier part of a sentence to cap off the sentence in a very sort of Leslie Nielsen sort of way.
Yeah.
Like repeating the statement as a tautological fact in a form of comedy. You know, who are you and how do you get in here? I'm a locksmith and I'm a locksmith. That sort of comedy. Krobo is also very good at running jokes, running gags. The Fresh Prince trilogy, as it is currently, has a few of these, which you were kind of getting at.
Yes, yeah. 3 years later is a recurring one. A lot of transitions happen with 3 years later.
Yeah, there's the "Would you make me a sandwich?"
Yep, yep.
And "Give me a hug, man," which was sort of like Will Smith's version of "Would you make me a sandwich?"
Yeah. Honestly, Carlton's name is kind of used multiple times as a running gag.
Carlton is like deified in these. Yeah, they're YouTube poops of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, in case you couldn't tell. And all of them manage to make the theme song different in their own unique ways, which is really good. But, like, those are great. It's really fun watching Fresh Prince 3 and seeing the return of old jokes from 2 and 1. But even watching Fresh Prince 2 again, I saw jokes from Fresh Prince 1 that I'm like, oh, that's a callback. That's a fun one.
Yeah.
And just the callbacks have sort of gained their own life.
It's, yeah, there's a lot of lines that have essentially become pseudo-internet canon, at least in this particular circle.
Yeah. I also have to point out, the way that Krobo does scene transitions and cuts, he often likes to use cuts that are similar, but have, like, a character in a different spot or a slightly different character. There's a bit in Fresh Prince 3 where it's a hospital scene, and a nurse opens the door to show Carlton, and then Carlton suddenly appears where the nurse was, and the nurse disappears.
Yeah.
So there's, like, an element of continuity between the shots, but not in the way you'd expect. Or, like, it cuts from an episode where someone's standing in the kitchen to a scene from an episode where the kitchen's on fire, as if the person exploded into fire. As an audience, it's obvious that these are two different episodes and there are separate events happening there, but the cut is made to sort of juxtapose them and imply this different sense of continuity with very little editing to be actually done.
Yeah, it's there's an essay to be made, and we're not going to make it here today, about like the usage of that kind of legacy programming. Because, like, the reason that there is so much to source from is because there's all kinds of wacky situations. The reason that 3 years later, for example, like, became a joke in the second one, I believe, is when it really kicked in, is because there are so many shots from the show that have that shot of the outside house with 3 years later. And so, like, you know, the fact that, like, there's all these different ways that you can twist things, like the shot of the kitchen with, you know, suddenly being on fire, or there's a joke that splices in two scenes from the same hospital with Carlton being the central figure in both of them. And so, like, it's interesting how that lends itself to comedy just by right of there being a lot of sources of these characters in these silly situations.
Yeah, there's also a lot of stream of consciousness between the transitions. You'll often see, like, something happening, and then it'll cut to the characters watching the events of that YouTube poop on TV.
Yes.
There's a lot of, like, zooming into someone's mouth, and then inside their mouth is the next scene.
Yep.
It's also worth noting that Fresh Prince of Bel-Air has been a source that Krobo has used for a long time. While on their current channel, Fresh Prince is really the only videos of it, on their old channel that got taken down, they had at least, like, 4 or 5 Fresh Prince videos, and the breath mints that are so omnipresent in the most recent one were also a major factor in their previous Fresh Prince video. So not only is Krobo, like, referencing the other Fresh Prince YouTube poops, but they're older YouTube poops that you have to find, like, an archive to look up. But I think overall, this is just really cool as someone who's a super long-term fan of YouTube Poops as like a medium in a community, because like this year we've also seen Captain Pan make a really big resurgence and do a ton of work both for like just making YouTube Poops and making like publicizing the process of it. He has some really good like tips on Twitter about just the creative process in general.
Nice.
Walrus Guy made a few YouTube Poops this year. I know Deeper Cut has a Twitter account now, but I don't think he's made anything this year. But like still, it's cool to see people still doing well in coming back to the medium. It's like it kind of gives a feeling that they haven't abandoned it, or that they haven't like grown out of it. Because I think YouTube Poops are often considered very immature. And so knowing like, wait, this guy who's literally married has a wife and has a real job, quote unquote, is still making shitty YouTube Poops of Yu-Gi-Oh! GX. Like, there's something kind of fun and heartwarming about that almost.
Yeah. Yo, he's married and he has a wife? Goddamn.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, you can be married and not have a wife.
True. You can be married and have a husband.
Yeah.
Or you can be married and have a Moomin.
Good one.
So, I don't know how to transition from that. Speaking of things from the
2000s. Yeah.
Aha!
Yes, speaking of things with princes in them.
Ah.
Speaking of things that are funny. Speaking of communities that refuse to die out.
Speaking of communities that are problematic.
come on. So, This is sort of a different episode. This kind of speaking of callbacks.
Yeah.
This is kind of a callback to earlier this year when we did our fighting game prol. We had an episode on Rivals of Aether, which touched on the history of platform fighters, mainly in the context of the genre as a whole, but we're going to be covering some of the same ground here because we kind of wanted to look at Melee. Melee is a game that we are both very intimately familiar with. There's a lot to talk about, and it's very, very important to the internet. So take that, you from the last episode at the end.
Yeah, take that, me from the last episode at the end.
Yeah. And so this is going to be sort of a mixture of a lot of different parts of Melee, and a mixture of more general reception and personal tales about it. But I think this is also just a nice, chill episode. It's going to be filled with nostalgia.
True.
I hope you weren't trying to past No Nostalgia November. It's currently November 30th, so you've probably succeeded if you're listening to this.
Yep, but you're gonna fail Dreams
Drop Distance December. Tag your friends to totally play Kingdom Hearts Dream Drop Distance. So do you mind if we go into the fact corner here?
Yes, I do mind. Okay, now I don't mind.
Okay.
The Fact Corner.
So, Super Smash Bros. Melee is the second game in the Super Smash Bros. Series, released in the year 2001 for the Nintendo GameCube.
Feel old yet?
If not, then just wait. Melee was made in a 13-month development cycle, which sounds absolutely torturous.
That's hell.
Work began in the year 2000, which was shortly after Smash Bros. Released. The first Smash Bros. For the Nintendo 64. I'm pretty sure they just needed something on the GameCube, and Miyamoto was like, hey Sakurai, can you make another Smash Bros. For me? We need something on the GameCube. Nobody wants Wave Race. He's like, but Wave Race is one of the best games ever made. I know. We've failed the community, and the community has failed us. Never again shall we fail the community. And so they decided to make Smash Bros. Melee. Melee is a really interesting game. It is another platform fighter, which means it is a fighting game where you move around as a platformer, you run, you jump from side to side, and also you can hit your opponents and punch them, and ultimately the goal is to KO them, knocking them off stage, a la some sort of wrestle ring, or sumo, perhaps.
It is the progenitor to modern platform fighting, is I think a fair statement.
Yeah, while Smash 64 was the sort of basis for a lot of it, I think Melee established a lot more conventions. It is definitely a refinement of a lot of the core mechanics of 64, and as we'll get into a bit later, I believe it is also the introduction to many, many controversial decisions in game design.
But important here is that it is also foundational in the genre that then would go on to be iterated upon as it is nowadays.
Mm-hmm. It is, of course, a crossover featuring characters from Nintendo and heavily associated with Nintendo in the case of Pokemon. You know, you've got your Mario, your Luigi, your Bowser, your Donkey Kong. You also have interesting pulls like the Ice Climbers from the game Ice Climbers, or Mr. Game & Watch from the Game & Watch line of watches that had games.
You also had an interesting pull in Marth and Roy. We often don't, you know, specifically remember it, but Marth and Roy were, you know, from a Japanese game that wasn't released at the time, I don't believe.
Yeah,
I'm very certain Fire Emblem for the Game Boy Advance, which was the West's first introduction to Fire Emblem, as it were, was not released at the time of Melee. So it was just like, you have all these recognizable characters and these two from this one series that Sakurai worked on.
Yeah, so Fire Emblem, it's actually interesting. Might as well just bring this up now that Melee is often credited with the reason why Fire Emblem became any amount of popular in the West.
Yeah.
That, like, Marth and Roy were just so cool, they got swords! They're like cool princes, and they got swords and capes, and they're so cool. And they were cool enough that people were like, wait, what game are they from? Fire Emblem? And so people bought Fire Emblem, and they're like, wait, this doesn't have Roy or Marth, it has Seth. Who's Seth? Never mind, Seth is cool, he rides a fucking horse. Alright, you know what? Fine. And then Fire Emblem, it definitely took a while to become the force that it is today.
Fire Emblem Awakening was originally going to be the last game in the series because it was waning in popularity. And then Awakening was really popular, and now it's arguably one of the more popular series that Nintendo has.
Yeah. Also, I want to point out that Captain Falcon is a really interesting choice because you don't really see him in most of the games. Like, I'm sure there's, like, material where you do see him, but he isn't really heavily featured because in the game he's driving a car.
Yeah.
From F-Zero.
Like, F-Zero GX for the GameCube was, I think, the first that really delved into him as a character, and I use that with heavy air quotes. But yeah, Melee, like, Melee's choice to have him as a representative is also a very interesting one.
He was in Smash 64 as well.
Yeah, true.
The thing with Captain Falcon is that, like, when Melee was first being made, it wasn't developed as a crossover. There was a separate fighting game prototype, and one of the characters was this, like, fast-moving, punching, kicking guy.
Yeah, right.
And they just kind of slapped that onto Captain Falcon and established a ton of lore from there. Like, I'm pretty sure the Falcon Punch, it's only in Smash Bros. And the anime. You don't Falcon Punch anything in you know, F-Zero. You drive a car.
Actually, if you Falcon Punch your steering wheel, you go faster. That's a hidden tech that not many people who don't play F-Zero don't know. And people who do play F-Zero will tell you it's fake, but it's real.
The differences between Melee and Smash 64 are pretty big. Obviously, there's the shift in resolution that the extra console generation granted, as well as, like, more stages, more music, better music, or at least higher fidelity music. It's not shitty MIDI. I mean, I love me some shitty MIDI, and N64 MIDI isn't exactly the most shittiest MIDI-est. It's maybe mid.
These are pretty good.
Some of the MIDIs are goodies, like Gourmet Race on Dreamland, of course, but I mean, not all of them are great. But Melee has, like, orchestrated soundtracks.
Yes.
Just listen to the difference between, like, the Pokemon Stadium theme in the Smash 64, was it Goldenrod City? Ecruteak? No, it's a city. And the Pokemon Stadium from Pokemon Stadium from Smash Bros. Melee on the GameCube. It's different. There are also more single-player modes. Granted, they removed Board the Platforms. It will be missed. They added All-Star Mode, Adventure Mode, which is like a story mode, but not really. It has levels you go through, though, which is neat. And they added trophies. I think trophies were added in Melee. And that was a fun way to look at things. And it's how a ton of kids in America learned about things like Guru-Guru-Rin? Is that it? Kuru-Kuru-Rin?
Kuru-Kuru-Rin, Daisy's Third Eye.
We'll get to that.
Oh, the landmine? That's not...
We'll explain that too.
Yeah,
later.
Okay.
Please, I need to not get into that. I'm doing the overview.
Damn it.
It has event matches, which are like matches against computers with special rules and setup. Where, like, you know, you have to fight every Pokemon, or you have to fight three villain characters, and you can unlock characters and whatnots through that as well. The main differences, though, are in the gameplay more, it's like, in the battles. You have way more characters in Smash 64.
Over double thousand.
And the like, mechanics are pretty different. The biggest ones that most people will notice are that there are extra moves. On 64, there were no forward specials, for example.
Yes.
You have your normal attack button and your special attack button. And if you press the normal attack button in a direction at the same time and hold it, you get a strong attack, a smash attack. Forward specials did not exist in 64. They gave everyone a new special in Melee. I don't think they had forward aerials either.
No. Yeah, you only. I'm fairly certain the only moves they had specifically were your ups, downs, neutrals, and technically I believe you did have like running jab or, you know, your running stuff. But yeah, forward was an all new direction that could only be done on the GameCube.
Yeah. The hit stun was slightly changed. Smash 64 is still notable to this day for having ridiculously long hit stun, which means that like there are true combos in the game that can last very long. Whereas in Melee, hitstun is a lot more short, and directional influence, the ability to sort of control the angle and direction and speed you get knocked back, is heightened more in Melee than in 64. Now, the one most people will tell you about, or at least most competitive players, is the physics.
Yes.
Melee is much faster than 64. Walk speed and run speed, but especially run speed.
It is still to this day, I think, the fastest
official Smash game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without any, you know, mods or anything. Like, it is a much faster game than the previous one. It is faster than Ultimate. It makes the game what it is. It's what makes the game so compelling to this day. And, like, I think really makes a lot of people still want to play it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, like, the gravity is higher than in most of the other Smash Bros. Games, except maybe Ultimate, but it's hard to say. The, like, jump acceleration, the speed at which you rise, is, I think, overall faster, and same with fall speed. Which leads to a game where not only are you moving left and right faster, but you're going up and down faster as well. I think it's a good time to mention wave dashing.
Yes.
So, if you press the dodge button in midair, you will dodge in a direction. This is an air dodge. If you air dodge into the ground, your speed for whatever, you know, X and Y speed you are going at is converted to a little slide along the ground. Depending on the character's ground friction, this can go further or shorter. For example, Luigi has little to no ground friction, and so his wave dash is the longest. This is the wave dash.
Yes.
Air dodging into the ground.
So this is the part of the video where I say, and yes, I'm going to keep that take. There's a lot of like games that we talk about where we're like, play this first. Or, you know, when it comes to fighting games, it's like we talk a lot about essentially it is a lot easier to get into fighting games than you necessarily think it is. Like, you should be, you know, you should be experiencing this if you're interested. And if you think, oh, I'm, you know, not good enough at this, like you can still have a lot of fun with it. Competitive Melee is probably the biggest asterisk to this. Wave dashing, without getting too far into it, is incredibly unintuitive. Like, it is...
It takes a lot of practice for something that has been simplified in pretty much every game with wave dashing afterwards.
Yeah, and it's not like a lot of other games where wave dashing is good and even, you know, maybe required, but you can still get very far without learning it. It is required in Melee. Like, at high enough levels of play, you have to be wave dashing. You have to know the movement, you have to have it ingrained. And so, like, I'm not gonna say don't get into Melee, but, like, it is not the easiest one to be like, I want to try and get into this as, you know, join my local FGC. So, keep that in mind.
Expect quite a learning curve.
Yeah.
So for reference, the way wave dashing is, why wave dashing is good. Normally, when you run fast, but if you want to do an attack out of a run, you're limited to either a special or a dash attack.
Yes.
A dash attack is when you press A during a run. What if you wanted to not do a dash attack and instead wanted to do your down tilt, where you hold down and press A? Well, you either have to stop and then do it, you have to, like, crouch, which has a long animation, and do it, or you could wave dash and do it, which is the quickest way of those. Also, what if you wanted to go backwards? So, Melee, unlike most fighting games, plat fighters specifically, unlike most fighting games, your direction you face is independent of your opponent, with a asterisk next to Ryu, Ken, Kazuya, and Terry in Ultimate, and 4 for Ryu. But in most fighting games, if you want to go backwards, you are still facing the opponent, you're just walking back. In a plat fighter, you turn around and go the other direction, because similar to a platformer, your direction of that you face is just the direction you're moving. It's independent. Moving backwards, like while facing backwards, is usually like a way to show off. Like in Mario World, if you want to turn around and like go the other way, you have to do some weird shenanigans where you hold the direction before you jump, and then when you jump, you let go so that you're not holding the direction in midair. And it's really funny when it looks good, but it's hard to do, and it's kind of useless. In Melee, though, and in most plat fighters, if you want to go backwards while still facing the opponent, you have to wave dash.
Yes.
That's really important when all your attacks hit in front of you. So if you want to make space while still threatening your opponent, you have to wave dash.
It's also very important when you have directional moves like, you know, for example, Fox's up tilt only really has a hitbox from his behind. And so, you know, turning around and being able to continue forward and, you know, threaten someone with that hitbox is very important if you, you know, want to specifically keep your movement fluid and not fuck up everything.
I'm movement fluid, actually.
Yeah. Good.
Okay.
Shout out to all my movement fluid friends.
Yeah.
Which is you.
Nice. So, wave dashing is one of the big things people talk about. It's really notorious in the game. There's also L canceling, which I need to talk about, because I'm not going to get the chance to talk about L canceling ever again. Everyone has strong opinions on L canceling. You may ask yourself, L canceling? What, are we going to Twitter to talk about Death Note?
I was perhaps about to make a joke like that, yes.
We share the same brain cells. So, this is actually something that was in Smash 64.
Wait, you could cancel L in Smash 64?
I know, right? Sakurai was a big fan of Takeshi Obata.
Damn, he's super ahead of his time.
Yeah, that's actually why L died.
Sakurai specifically asked and was like, I'd like you to get... In my game, Smash 64, don't use the L button for anything, so I'd like you to get rid of L, the character.
I can picture L, like, curled up in his chair with, like, his feet on the chair, and he's just holding a GameCube controller, and you can hear the clickety-clack of the control stick. He probably plays Marth.
Oh, hell yeah, he plays Marth.
Yeah, so, anyways, here's a bit of a technical thing. So, when you do a move in midair, and you land, there's an extra bit of recovery frames where you can't do anything. In Smash, they call it landing lag. In most fighting games, they call it recovery frames. The frames after an animation, that is both the animation of the character winding down, but also way to sort of balance out moves. More committal moves mean that you have maybe a stronger hitbox, but you're weaker and you can't recover as quickly after it's done. You're open for a bit. Now, what if I told you that you could just cut the amount of frames in half? Just because, you know, if you want, all you gotta do is press L shortly before you land.
It's at this time I'd like to remind you that this game had a 13-month dev cycle.
This was in Smash 64 as well!
Wait, it was?
Yeah, you could press Z, it's Z-canceling in that one.
Huh. Wait, why? Like, yeah. This is an intended mechanic.
Yep,
okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep, okay. So L canceling at a competitive level is required because it removes the risk from almost every move. There are some cancels. There are some characters who can't L cancel. Rest in peace. I live a life of pain.
Oh, you're only playing the 19th best character or worst character.
Yeah, I know. And there are some characters where it doesn't matter as much. Like, I think Link, some of his aerials just. You still have a ton of ending lag anyways, so
yeah.
It's not as helpful. But for most characters, it is pretty much required at a competitive level. Because, again, you're removing the risk from a move.
It's essentially, like, it's removing the risk, and it's also just, like, if you do it, you can act faster. If you don't do it, you can't act faster. There's no reason not to do it.
Yeah. Now, proponents of it will say that it is actually interactive because you can tilt your shield so slightly when you're blocking by barely touching the control stick, and you can adjust the timing at which the opponent hits the shield, because if you hit a shield during an aerial, the amount of time it takes before you have to L cancel differs due to hit stop.
I would say, how many times have you seen somebody use a shield in competitive melee?
Well, no, people do shield in competitive melee.
Like, true.
But usually it's to do out of shield options, like shine out of shield or up special out of shield or what have you. Like shield tilting like that isn't super common at 99% of levels of play. I think, so what I'm getting at is, I don't think L canceling is a great mechanic. I also don't think you could remove it from melee in particular, but there is a very good reason why, like, most plat fighters nowadays do not have L canceling and just opt to make the recovery lag lower across the board. That's what Ultimate did.
Yeah, yeah.
Ultimate feels pretty good because they were just like, I mean, the problem is that in Smash 4, the moves were too committal, so let's just make them a little less committal overall. And, like, the big ones, we can still manually make them longer.
Yeah. Ultimate is still probably, like, base game my favorite Smash game.
Casually, Ultimate's my favorite by far.
And so every once in a while I have this argument with my friends. Wave dashing is good. Wave dashing is good. In Melee, it is a confluence of many things, including the physics of the game and, like, maybe a slight amount of unintended mechanics. It's up in the air whether or not, like, they were aware of it, but it's up in the air whether it was a fully intended mechanic. But wave dashing as a movement option, wave dashing as an option to give characters, as a consideration for plat fighters, is unequivocally, I would argue, a good thing, even if it is awkward in Melee. L canceling, I feel like, doesn't have any interesting play to it.
Right.
It's just hit a button to have less landing lag. That's the option you should do. You should never not do that with anything.
Right.
Like, the punishment, I will say, quote unquote, for wave dashing is that you are stuck to a certain pattern. Like, you are now moving predictably in a sense. Your opponent can counterplay that. Like I said, it's a movement option, and it's something that your opponent has to consider and counter. All L-canceling does is add a button you have to press that if you don't, you are now fundamentally playing a worse game.
Wave dashing is also, like, something that is different per character, and so it becomes a pretty key part of certain characters' identities. Like, look at like, Eddie Mexico, or, I think it's Abate. Look at just the Luigi players play yeah. Luigi, and you'll see what I mean, that, like, Luigi as a character in Melee, as, like, a mechanical set of tools, so much of the identity that has driven, so much of the emergent gameplay and strategy is due to wave dashing. But, like, L-canceling doesn't really have any, like, extra things to it that you can really play around. Like, there's the bit about shield poking and shield tilting, but that's about it. I also think it is an invisible skill, one that doing it correctly means that you won't see it, whereas, like, doing it incorrectly is visible, and I think just that sucks. Wave dashing is kind of cool to watch, especially if you're playing a character who has a good wave dash, so, like, at least for me, if I try to wave dash in Melee and I succeed, I'm like, hey, look, Mom, I did that! But if I try to L cancel, I don't really see anything to be proud of. I'm like, cool, I landed my aerial. Like, L-canceling is something you should do and not think about because, like, you do it every time you do an aerial. It's just routine. Whereas wave dashing, I don't know, it's flashier, it's more interesting, you can see it, you get results.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, yeah, it's complicated. Again, though, like, most modern plat fighters, by the way, so wave dashing in Melee requires sort of a timing bit. You have to almost piano your buttons where you jump and then air dodge.
Yeah.
Rivals of Aether gives you the ability to air dodge during jump squat, which is, like, think of it like when you jump, you kind of crouch down and then jump up. The squat part is the jump squat while you're still on the ground. And you can air dodge during that to essentially wave dash by pressing two buttons at once. You can jump and dodge at the same time to wave dash. beautiful. Works like a charm.
Infinitely better. Incredibly intuitive.
This would later be replicated by Slap City, I think. But Slap City also, wave dashing is not faster than walking for every character.
Yeah.
So with Slap City, wave dashing is purely for the positioning. They would do that in Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl 2. They would have that same macro. And I think there's a few other games. Like, I think Framemakers has the same... No, wait. Framemakers has a dash button. That's the other thing, is some plat fighters nowadays have dash buttons. Rushdown Revolt's the same way. Multiverses is weird, and I'm not going to talk about it. But so, like, developers of new platform fighters have recognized that wave dashing is cool and useful and has interesting consequences, but they have opted to make it easier to the point where some of them are just putting it on its own button, because they recognize that the method of inputting it was, like, weirdly difficult.
Yeah.
Also, the only game I can think of that has L canceling that is, like, not a Smash game is Stardust Valkyries, which, let me remind you, is the game with a skunk girl named Stinky.
Hang on a second, I have to Google something really quick. Stardust Valkyries Steam Key.
Steam Key?
Steam Key.
Steam Key. I love Ren and Steam Key.
Oh, no.
Steam Key. Back to Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl 2. But, so, yeah, that's the L-canceling rant for me. Anything you want to add to that before we move on to the next topic?
No, you're 100% correct, and everyone should listen to your opinion, because it's objectively 100% right.
Thank you. I'm so glad I have the arbiter of objectivity on this podcast.
True. I got my certification from the Brad Defoe University. It's a little Folding Ideas joke for the longtime fans of Folding Ideas who watch our podcast also. I keep saying watch. I don't intend to say watch, but
we don't
stick
do
to
video podcast.
And we never will until Wink. We do.
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about the competitive community. I think that's a good spot to go next here.
Yes.
So Melee has a big competitive community. It was popular when it first came out. There is an entire documentary that a lot of people have already watched, called The Smash Brothers, about the history of the Melee competitive community. What started as just people playing games in their bedrooms and dorms turned into a large tournament scene with national followed by global rivalries and communities. And nowadays, it is honestly, I would say, one of the larger fighting game scenes.
Yeah.
Especially taking Smash as a whole, I think definitely it's one of the largest, and a lot of, like, Ultimate's popularity comes from the Melee community as well.
I don't think it is unfair to say that a lot of Smash Bros. Continued success and interest is in part because Melee is still active.
Right. Melee has a high skill ceiling and a fairly high skill floor, to be honest, but it has a huge skill ceiling and so many little mechanics to learn and get good at that, like, very few people are actually good at. And it's a fighting game, and fighting games always have a level of skill involved to them.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's had a huge longevity. It's had a lot of storied players. Some interesting things to note. So, there was a long time where there was, like, a few really strong players. The most famous one being Ken, who I think is still sponsored by Team Liquid, despite not doing anything in tournaments for the past, like, 10 years.
Nice. Get that paper.
And Melee saw popularity in MLG, the actual MLG circuit, until 2008 when it was replaced by Brawl. And Brawl has its own episode, essentially.
Yeah, Brawl, for the sake of competitive Smash Brothers, Brawl is essentially a much worse product.
Right.
There's a lot of asterisks there, but we're not going to get into it.
However, at the time, most people did play Brawl.
Yes. So, it was the new game.
Yeah. And I believe this was until Revival of Melee was a big tournament that was supposed to be the Revival of Melee after Brawl kind of ended up kerflunking.
Yep.
Melee started to get a bit more steam through the early 2010s. The tournaments like Genesis and the Big House, until finally Evo 2013, Evo, the biggest fighting game tournament in the world for many, many years. It had a charity drive where people would donate money to, you know, support a cause that I don't remember. But anyways, when they would donate, they would say, you know, I want this game on the roster. And whichever game got the most donations won the spot in the Evo main stage. And the first place was Super Smash Bros. Melee, runner-up being Skullgirls. Smash Melee was in Evo from 2013 to 2018 then, where it was dropped. I believe Ultimate's still on the main stage of Evo, though.
Makes sense.
So it had a huge competitive eyes there. I need to reiterate, by the way, that very few fighting games are big enough for their own major where you rent out a convention center.
Yeah.
Very few, fighting game, franchises. Like, if you go to a major that has Street Fighter, it will almost certainly also have Guilty Gear, Tekken, maybe Mortal Kombat, maybe BlazBlue, other fighters like that. But, you don't go to a Street Fighter major. You don't go to a Tekken major. Like, even though they have tournament circuits that are sponsored by their companies, those are typically done in cooperation with these major tournaments.
Yeah.
Smash Bros. Has, five.
it is incredibly impressive how dominant Smash Bros. Is. Not dominant over the entire scene, but, you could argue it is one of the most, known fighting games, period. Street Fighter 2 would have something to say about that, perhaps, but Smash Brothers and especially Melee are widely recognized to a degree that other fighting games aren't.
Yeah, but with the size thing, they have Genesis, Riptide, Smash Con, Big House. Those four tournaments are primarily Smash Bros. Games, with I think Riptide added Guilty Gear Strive to its main roster this past year. Which also speaks a lot to Guilty Gear Strive, as we did talk about in the Guilty Gear Strive episode.
Yes. I'm probably a Giovanna player, by the way, if you want a sequel to that episode.
Yeah, I've been learning Testament. But, Melee is huge. The size of the competitive scene is big. There are a lot of notable names within the community. I mentioned a few Luigi players, but, I want to shout out a few. Amza is one that we've talked about on the podcast before.
And we will continue to talk about.
He is the best Yoshi player, the Red Yoshi. He had a phenomenal 2022 and a lot of strong 2023. Just really cool guy as well. Also, shout out to Axe, the Pikachu main that's in the top 10 pretty frequently. He is famous for liking pizza. he has a custom URL. He bought the domain axe.pizza and it redirects to his stream.
Nice.
There's a lot of queer players in the Melee scene.
Yes.
Notable ones include Magi, who is a Falco main. I think she's second best Falco at this point.
Base.
And Salt, who is one of the best Captain Falcon mains. Also, half of every Peach player is non-binary.
Hell yeah.
Which is really fun. That's just really fun.
True. It wouldn't be until Ultimate, where they added Goth Zelda, that, you know, the pastel and goth non-binary community really, mended their rift.
Yeah. Now, as far as the main the popular players go, you'll often hear about the five gods, which were Mango Armada, Mewtwo King, PPMD, aka Dr. Peepee, and Hungrybox. And then there's Leffen, who is the God Slayer, because he was the first person to kill all the gods. The gods were the gods because there is a long stretch of years where only those five won major tournaments. And then eventually more people started winning tournaments. So some of the people you'll see nowadays in tournaments are, along with those mentioned, Plup, who is a former Samus player, currently Sheik and Fox dual main.
Nice.
Cody, formerly IBDW. We don't know what that stands for. He changed his name to just Cody, which is his real name, Cody Schwab. He's a Fox main, one of the best at it. You'll often see Zane, who is the best Marth player, ridiculously consistent player, very good, very strong. Wizrobe, who is another Captain Falcon player, who's notable for his very defensive playstyle and also being absolutely ridiculous with one of the most difficult mechanics, SDI. I'm not even going to go into explanations of it.
I believe we talked about it in the Platfighter episode.
Maybe. Just he does things that most people shouldn't be able to do with Captain Falcon.
Nice.
Franz is the best Dr. Mario, and he is great. And J-Mook is another new contender who is a solo sheik and one of the only solo sheiks to ever win a major in history. And he is just another, like, really strong player who has been doing a lot of good work with Sheik. I think Triff and Laude are the main Peach mains nowadays, along with Polish. Triff is Spanish, and so only really shows up when there's European tournaments or when he can get a ride for, or like, a flight to U.S.
Can I get a ride?
Can I get a ride to U.S.? Laude is a doctor, and so has less time.
Understandable.
He, of course, uses the white color scheme for Peach.
Nice.
And then I also want to shout out... I really want to shout out Swooper and Morse Code, who are really funny Samus players. Samus is like a weird mid-tier that is good, but also not good, but also good. And Samus is just really funny to watch because the Samus players have decided the best way to play her is to be as unpredictable as possible and do the dumbest things alive.
Yeah.
One of my favorite fighting game sets of all time is Cody versus Swooper at Nightclub, where Swooper goes to the edge of the stage and presses down B over and over again for like a minute. Yeah. So that being said, though, like the players are all very good. But what about the characters?
Well, you see, I have this little list. It is a list that has brought many tears, you could say.
Why are you gonna do this to me, man?
Oh, little brother.
Heart of a champion.
Yeah. So
this is part of Melee's public perception.
So, okay. Arguably, I would say that there are probably two incredibly negative perceptions about Melee. Number one is the community. We're not going to talk about that. Number two is the tier list. So I'm going to specifically shout out, there's two real tier lists here. The ninth tier list that was compiled, or at the very least the ninth tier list that the SSB wiki shouts out, is the October 14th, 2008 tier list. I think this is the one that people who, you know, are in the circuit but, like, don't know a lot of the specifics think is still the most accurate one. It's the one that has, Fox at the top, and then, like, Fox, Marth, Sheik, Falco. Pichu is at the bottom along with Kirby and Mewtwo and stuff. It's got, you know, it's the list that I think that if you're familiar with the tier list, quote unquote, it's probably the one that you're most familiar with. Yeah. It is not 100% accurate nowadays, but it's analyzing why this was the tier list at the time when everybody assumed that they were just going to go on to Brawl and be like, well, this is the last tier list we'll ever have to make because no one's going to play Melee ever again. It makes a lot of sense when you know some of the deeper mechanics of these individual characters.
Right. A lot of the top tier characters are the ones that are faster and have safer moves or can kill more consistently. Notable ones are Marth, who has a big sword and fast moves and can kill very consistently because the end of his sword does more damage and knocks back further. Marth is a character who is sort of a zoner in that he wants to keep the opponents at bay, but he does so with a big weapon. He's like a mid-range character.
Yeah.
And then Ice Climbers is a character that has an infinite where you grab them and you pummel them in a certain rhythm. And that's been banned and unbanned and banned and unbanned many times. I don't remember if it was banned at the time of 2008, but Ice Climbers was still very popular even besides that. Very hard character with high potential, essentially. Notable ones, though, are when you start to get to middle and low tier. Pikachu was in low tier, whereas nowadays Pikachu is considered much better.
Yes, Pikachu has gone up a lot.
Yeah, and same with Yoshi, obviously. Yoshi's in the bottom tier between Ness and Bowser, above Mewtwo and above Pikachu, or Pichu and Kirby. And I think the biggest things is that they didn't have obvious strengths, and they didn't really have people experimenting and really pushing the characters. Like the middle tier, I think, for example, which is Samus, Doc, Ganon, Luigi, DK, and Mario. The middle tier is like characters who have an obvious strength, but also obvious weaknesses. So like, Samus has really good projectiles. Charge Shot can kill very easily. Missile is good. But, like, Samus has a low gravity and jumps higher than most people, so the very aerial-focused metagame of Smash Bros. Does not work well with her. Or Ganondorf has very strong kill potential and the funny warlock slap.
He do have a bit. He also has a big funny foot sometimes.
But he's super slow.
Extremely slow. He's and my main.
So, like, he has strengths, but he has very clear weaknesses. Whereas, like, some characters like Pikachu nowadays have very well-known strengths and still have pretty clear weaknesses, but, like, the strengths are that much.
Yeah, like, Pikachu went from being 16 on the 2008 list to the 2021 list, which also comes with its own asterisk that we do not have time to get into. But the most recent list that's generally accurate to sentiment has Pikachu at 9, like 7 spaces up.
Right below Ice Climbers.
Meanwhile, high to mid tiers are shuffled around a bit,
but not significantly.
Yeah, the current is still generally there. Sheik has fallen to number 5, whereas Puff has gone to number 3.
Mm-hmm. I think this is a matter of personality and patience. So let's talk a bit about some of these characters and why they're here.
Yes.
Do you know why Fox is number 1 on pretty much every tier list ever fucking made?
Well,
the year is 20XX.
The year is 20XX. So, completely off the cuff, given everything I know about everything, Fox is a very, very speedy character in a game that is a very, very speedy game. He has a lot of very good options. His projectile is a very good pester tool because it doesn't make your opponent do anything. You know, it doesn't flinch your opponent, unlike Falco's, for example. But it still keeps adding to their percentage in a game where low percentage to kill is a little more true than not.
It forces the opponent to interact.
Yes. And so, like, his speed is good. His movement ability is also very good. He has a good wave dash and a lot, like, your high-level players are going to be able to, you know, go from, like, platform to stage to platform to stage to platform to stage very, very quickly. And so you have a lot of mix-up potential. His shine, of course.
Yeah. Shine is a move that comes out frame 1. Say it with me now. And you can jump out of shine so you can do things like wave dash out of shine. And you can shine outside of shield if you shield and then jump and then shine.
I love it. Just like Mama used to sing to me every night before I'd go to bed.
Fox's shine hits horizontally and has enough hit stun that you can combo into itself using a wave dash. Also, if you're off stage, it hits for long enough that the opponent usually can't get enough height to recover back to stage if you hit them once with a shine. So Fox has some of the best edge guarding, which is where you prevent the opponent from grabbing onto the edge of the stage to recover.
Fox's shine is iconic. One of the moves of all time.
Yeah.
And I mean that both appreciatively and derogatorily.
I think, like, when you think about iconic fighting game moves, you've got everything Ryu has.
Yes.
You've got, like, 100 kicks, Blanca Ball, you've got, like, Get Over Here, maybe, like, Sub-Zero's, like, Ice or, who has the hat?
The hat is Kung Lao.
Or Kung Lao's hat. You have, like,
maybe Guile's Sonic Boom.
Yeah, Sonic Boom. Anything in Street Fighter 2, really.
Yeah.
You have, like, Electric Wing God Fist. And then you have Shine. It's so iconic that every Plat Fighter has a Shine. In Stardust Valkyries, the one with the skunk girl named Stinky, every character has a Shine in that game. It's yes. Funny. It's iconic. It's important. It's part of Fox's kit. It lets you do so much. It's just a fast hitbox that does everything out of it. It is iconic. It's also just, like, kind of busted.
Yeah.
Also, Fox just kills really easily. Up throw up air is, like, one of the first true kill confirms to be found in the game. And you can do it against pretty much anyone. Fox is just really good. Really fast, does literally everything you want him to do. Also has one of the best recoveries in the game.
Yeah, it is. So I feel like I want to draw a line here as well, because I feel like the perception of Melee outside of Melee, and it's not an entirely unwarranted perception, is essentially no items, Final Destination, Fox only. It's the, you know, Fox is the character, and everything exists really only in relation to him. that's not fully true. Meta Knight is a character that defines all of Brawl, for example.
No bad matchups.
Yeah, Meta Knight is the character in Brawl to the point where people literally just banned him. Fox is a character that I think is really important to Melee, especially considering, like, Fox has pretty consistently been the top character just because he has no, like, a lot of really good options and no real bad times to do them. But Fox is not all Melee is. Like, yeah. I would not say that Fox, like, there is a reason that, you know, the S tier, the highest tier, has multiple characters that all still have their own strengths and weaknesses. Because all of them have, you know, Marth, like you said, is a strange zoner character who still has a sword, who's, you know, really, really good at comboing, really, really good at, like, capitalizing on mistakes.
Yeah.
Puff is a wacky, fun, floaty character who you just can't kill.
Yeah, so Jigglypuff is a balloon who, like, she's hard to combo. She's light, which means that if you hit her with a strong enough attack, she will die quicker than most other characters. But you have to get her to the right percentage, which is hard when she flies away from you.
Yep.
She has the best air drift in the game, meaning if you were to wiggle the control stick left to right, she goes much further while jumping. Her aerial moves are really strong, especially back air.
Yep,
the and, foot. Yeah. And, like, additionally, the biggest thing is she has rest, which kills at, like, 30%.
Yeah.
And she can combo into it in hundreds of ways.
Rest is also just generally one of the hypest moves in anything.
I like, so Hungrybox is maybe the most famous Puff player in general. And he just said that he started playing Puff because he saw Rest, thought it didn't do anything, saw his brother do it, and then was like, I want to do that every time. Puff is really good because you can't get close to her. She instills the fear of God in you.
Yeah.
She, HBox calls it bubble theory, but it's just like, her air mobility is so strong, along with, like, the strength of her air options, that she can kind of be in many different places very quickly and can punish so many mistakes and can kill very early for any mistake you make. So she can be tough to play, but also she has very good, like, punishing the opponent's mistakes. That being said, you have to be super patient to play her well. And a lot of people who play Puff just go, I want to jump in and do my moves, and then they die for that. She is like a keep-away character in many ways.
Yeah. Melee is not a game that is defined by one character. I would say it's more a game defined by, like, 7 to 8.
Yeah.
And, like, there is an amount of, you know, other characters are primarily in relation to it, but there's also fun, interesting standouts. Luigi, we've already talked about, but Luigi really deserves his own. There is not really kind of like a modern version of Melee Luigi that I can think of. Melee Luigi is such a wacky character, primarily because his wave dash opens up all of his options, or a lot of his options,
the
at least.
The closest thing is maybe Edelis in Rivals.
Yeah.
Because Edelis has a similar amount of, like, ground-heavy speed, whereas, like, he has very little air speed. It's just Rivals doesn't have the same defensive options, which means the offensive options don't quite work the same in context.
Yeah. I love that Luigi is, like, not, you know, he's a mid-tier, but he's a mid-tier that will pop up every now and again because he's such a strange threat.
Mm-hmm.
It's very fitting to Luigi's character and very, like, fun that, you know, of especially considering this era of Nintendo. Yeah.
Going back to the top tiers, I want to quickly rattle off a few ones.
Yes, absolutely.
Falco is similar to Fox, but with a better combo game, more consistent combos, and also Falco Laser is the best projectile in the game. It does a decent amount of hit stun. It's fairly big. What's also important to note about Falco and Fox Laser is they have something called auto-canceling, where if you land during the recovery frames, you don't have recovery frames.
Yeah.
So what you do is you do a short hop, which is the shortest possible jump, do a laser, fall very fast by holding down, and then you can act out of that.
Yeah.
Which makes Falco kind of the best zoner in the game for projectiles, better than Samus or Link, because he just can move while he does projectiles, whereas they can't. Falco's just very good, though. Shine is still good. It works slightly differently, but still mostly the same. Sheik is a ninja who is very fast. Not the fastest, but still very fast. has some of the best edgeguarding tools and also really weird combos. A lot of Sheik's strength comes in chain grabbing, though, which is just that her throws have, like, very little to no knockback. So you can throw someone and then either catch them and throw them again, or you can throw them, wait for them to get up, and then run up to them with your fast movement speed and throw them again.
Yeah. Sheik was, like, Sheik early on was actually, like, top tier in a lot of early, a lot of the early tier lists, and, like, very much only recently has gone slightly lower. Sheik used to be part of, like, Sheik Falco Fox. Like, Sheik Falco Fox used to be the three.
It's oh, you're
the
thinking of Magneto Storm Sentinel.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Captain Falcon, we mostly mentioned, is really fast, is the fastest character, big rushdown, has decent moves, but also has some of the next earliest kills next to Rest because of Knee. Especially Stomp Knee. Stomp is a move that has a billion years of hits done. And so you can do whatever you want. There's a video called, like, 100 Ways to Stomp Knee that is an art form. It is beautiful.
Falcon is also the character that, like, is probably the easiest to really try and pick up and learn the game with. Because a lot of his options are essentially just options that you still have in modern games. He, like, you still have to learn an amount of the game, and, you know, you have to learn the wave dashing, you have to learn the L canceling. But, like, the options of, you know, the options available to him at high level play and at mid level play are generally the same. It's still just a lot of, you know, game sense and knowing the specific mechanics of the game.
He's also just one of the most iconic Smash characters.
Yes.
Like, so much of his moveset's entirely made up for Smash, and much of his character as a character is made up for Smash. And, like, so many of his moves, like Knee or Falcon Punch or, you know, any of those are super iconic to the game.
Yeah. He is another character that I'm very happy, like, stuck out as one of the, like, the characters of Melee, and thus got a lot of iteration and, you know, homages and stuff in later platformers.
Okay. There's three more characters I want to mention.
Yes.
There's Peach, who is a floaty character who can hover over the ground based on Super Mario Bros. 2. You do this by holding down while you jump, and it allows her to do aerial moves super close to the ground, which gives her a very interesting form of aggression, where you can also easily fake out whether your aerial move will actually hit.
Yep.
She is similar to something like Ino or Morrigan from Guilty Gear or Darkstalkers, where, like, she is about doing aerial moves super low to the ground and making the opponent guess whether you'll actually hit them or do, like, a throw or something.
Yeah.
She also has turnips, which are just a pretty good projectile with a lot of different uses. And the Stitch Face is notable for being rare, but killing very easily.
Yeah.
There might be a theme among the top tiers and the high tiers, is that they kill.
Things that can kill.
Her down smash is also a notorious move that's very funny and easily spammable and hard to interrupt. Do it to your friends.
They'll thank you.
Pikachu is in the B+ tier. You remember, he moved up a bunch of spaces. Pikachu's strengths... He has a decent projectile, but you don't really do that in neutral. He has really good chain grabs, though. Some of the best in the game next to, like, Fox, Falco, Sheik, and maybe, like, Game & Watch. But the big thing about Pikachu is that his recovery is one of the best and also one of the farthest.
Yeah.
So Pikachu is often about going off stage, getting the opponent off stage, and then, like, using a mixture of all of his aerials, mainly up air, to just get the opponent far from the stage, and then up B can recover from most anywhere. Watch Axe versus Silent Wolf, or I think there was another one that was like Axe versus Mango that was a four stock. But it's like the fastest tournament games of Melee, where Axe just does Pikachu things and wins. And then Yoshi is the last main one I wanted to mention. Yoshi has shitty recovery, however, is really weird, and the reason Yoshi was thought to be garbage is because a lot of his like options make no sense at first. So when Yoshi double jumps, he has super armor. He has one hit of super armor for like most percents, where if you hit him while he's double jumping, he'll keep double jumping. But what's this? What if you canceled your double jump into a move?
Oh, no!
So Yoshi cannot be interrupted while double jumping and can use that to counter hit aerials or just throw out aerials that are really fast, combo well and are hard to interrupt or interact with. Also, he can just move around the stage without getting interrupted. Very good at baiting the opponent into dumb mistakes. Yoshi also has the weirdest shield in the game.
Yeah.
It's a big egg, and he can't jump out of it, and it takes too long to drop. But also, like, there's this weird thing where you can briefly put it up, and, like, you won't do the animation for it, but you'll have a frame of invulnerability.
Weird.
This is called parrying, and only Yoshi has it.
Nice.
Also, Yoshi's shield gets, like, the furthest shield pushback from getting hit. So, if you watch Amsa play and he shields, he will slide across the ground like a bowling ball. Yeah, Yoshi is, like, really hard to play, high execution, but really funny.
I also want to shout out the, like, lower tiers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because I think it's interesting analyzing why a lot of the lower tiers are lower tiers.
Yeah.
Especially considering, like, for example, like, Ultimate, I believe Kirby is, you know, decent.
He's okay.
Like, yeah, he's mid-tier. He's not bad at all. Kirby is terrible in this.
It's like no knockback, no kill potential. His throws don't work.
It's funny how bad of a character he is, like, in one of the... Considering he's, like, also the face of the series, too,
yeah.
It's very funny. It's also very funny that Sheik has a useless down B because Zelda sucks.
Well, no. Zelda has better recovery than Sheik.
Ah.
So you will see Sheik players switch to Zelda when they're far enough off stage because it gives them a better recovery. And sometimes you'll see a Sheik player switch to Zelda to style on someone.
True.
Zelda has some decent kill potential with her sweet spot aerials, but, like, doesn't have good neutral, doesn't have good movement.
Ganon, unfortunately, went down a good couple of places because, well, he's just sort of a worse Falcon.
He's too slow.
He's very slow, and that if you can hit it, it's big, stresses the if a lot.
If you can hit it, it's big. Galen, 2023.
If you give a Ganon a stomp, he will miss it terribly.
I want to shout out Link, who is a bag of tricks McGee.
Yes.
There's so many weird interactions with Link's, like, arrows and bombs and stuff. Please just watch Save State's videos. Her videos are beautiful. Shoutouts. And then Game & Watch, my main.
Yeah, Game & Watch.
Game & Watch is so close to being good. He has, like, really good aerials, really good tilts that are slow, but tons of combo potential, super early kill power. Everyone knows the hammer.
The hammer.
But there's just these two little problems where he can only L cancel two of his moves, forward air and down air. The other ones are not L cancelable, including parachute, which is IMO his best move.
Yeah.
And then also he has a tiny, tiny shield that doesn't work.
Yeah.
It just, like, it's shorter than all other characters' shields and also dies much quicker, so you can really not block any more than one or two hits.
This is a fun Galen fact here. I genuinely didn't know Game & Watch was in Melee until years after the fact, because he's the last character you unlock.
Yeah.
You unlock him for basically unlocking every other character. And so, like, even, you know, I had seen footage here and there. I had played it at a friend's house, but I had never seen Game & Watch unlocked until, you know, years later, like, post-Brawl, post-Smash 4, where I think we were just chatting, and I was like, wait, Game & Watch is in Smash? Game & Watch, I genuinely think, this is just conjecture as well, but I genuinely think is just kind of like a slightly unfinished character.
Yep.
Like, he was probably the last one they made, and as such, a lot of the stuff that probably would have gotten eked out in playtesting didn't get eked out in playtesting.
Also, I want to point out Mewtwo would be very good if his hitboxes didn't also have hurtboxes. He uses his tail like a sword, but the problem is you can still hit the tail. So, like, he's super weak to any amount of range or disjointed hitbox. His moves are pretty good. I mean, most of them are, at least. Some of them kind of suck. But, like, oh, and he's also very slow, which that doesn't help. But, like, he doesn't have the raw tankiness of Ganondorf or the kill potential of DK. And also, he cannot hold his own against most other characters.
Yeah.
Which is sad because he's almost really cool.
Pichu is, I think, one of the more iconic bad ones because Pichu is... P- Pichu is an interesting idea if you are making the game of like, oh, it's, you know, a faster Pikachu, but it has a downside because Pichu are bad at, you know, controlling themselves. Like, that's a cute idea. Unfortunately, dealing damage to yourself when you do moves is very bad in a game where, you know, like, the percentage to kill is still generally on the lower side, and a lot of your characters also have good combo potential to get you to those kill zones.
Yeah, Pikachu's extra weight combined with just the better range on moves like up air makes Pikachu a lot better by just base stats, that the extra speed Pichu has doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be until Ultimate where Pichu would return where they would, like, actually make it work.
Yeah. Yeah, and even then, if I remember correctly, Pichu does not see a lot of play in Ultimate.
And Pichu sees some play more as a counterpick nowadays. When the game first came out, Pichu was pretty popular. Anyways, we've talked a lot about the characters. There's a bunch of disparities. We're going very long. I wanted to bring up a bit of some personal stories with the game, though.
Yes.
Because we've talked exclusively about competitive play and nitty-gritty. So as a kid, I played this game a lot with my siblings. I'm the youngest of three. And, you know, we had Nintendo consoles because that had four players easily. And we had, you know, neighbors who would play it with us as well. And I would always lose. They actually, my siblings banned Ice Climbers because it was two characters. And they thought that was unfair. I thought that was bullshit.
They were ahead of their time.
So, but I would always lose. And I blame this for why I am so competitive with games nowadays. That I would lose to my siblings and I'd be like, I'm going to be so good. I'm going to beat them all the time one day. And then I did. And then they don't play Melee with me anymore. it's that, like, I was put in an environment where I was competing with my siblings. It was over Melee, you know, the funny Wahoo Mario game. But still, I think that definitely was a contributing factor to me.
Yeah.
However, Melee was also this, like, treasure chest of a game. In that, I think as a kid, there were a few games that I looked to as like a never-ending source of entertainment. This is something I've thought a lot after seeing a video by Big Yellow about Mario 64 DS. Is like, as a kid, there were a lot of games that I kind of made up my own games with or found my own fun.
Yes.
Melee, maybe less so for like custom rules and stuff like that. But Melee just had so much interesting things in it that I was obsessed with as a kid. Some examples, trophies.
Yes.
The trophies were cool, but they also had a lot of weirdness. For example, Daisy.
Daisy. Famously, if you position the camera behind Daisy, clipping through her hair, she has a third eye on the back of her head.
I hope this is canon.
Yeah, this is canon, actually.
This is canon.
They confirmed that in Wave 6.
Which is why they removed it in the PAL version.
True.
Yeah. The Daisy third eye is a pretty famous, like, weird error or Easter egg. I'm pretty sure they just messed up the model slightly, but, like, and they hit it with the hair, because who's going to look in the hair?
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to even see it. There's also Top Secret.
Yes,
this is a fun one. The landmine item and the cloaking device item, I believe. I know the landmine.
I believe the cloaking device is from Perfect Dark.
Okay, but that's also top secret.
Oh, wait, yeah, that's right. It is because, yep.
Yeah, so the landmine and the cloaking device are listed as top secret as their game of origin, and I don't think they have a description. The reason is because these are from Rareware games. The landmine was from GoldenEye, the cloaking device from Perfect Dark. And remember what happened between the Nintendo 64 and the GameCube involving Rareware?
Yeah, so there was this really famous game called Star Fox Adventures that exists because of this really long, complicated history that ends with Nintendo fumbling the bag on one of their best subsidiaries.
Their best partners.
Their best partners. Subsidiary. Wasn't a subsidiary, but fumbling the bag on one of their best partners and dooming them to...
Grabbed by the Ghoulies.
Yeah, dooming them to Grabbed by the Ghoulies and eventually Kinect Sports.
Yeah. And Sea of Thieves.
True.
Sea of Thieves nuts.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, so the connection with Rareware being bought out by Microsoft, mixed with the fact that GoldenEye was fucking GoldenEye, it would kind of be weird in a Nintendo game, like, about Mario and Yoshi and Pikachu, means that they were listed as top secret instead of given the proper credit.
Yep.
There's also, like, a serial number on the bottom of the barrel item. And I think it's, like, the date that Donkey Kong came out in arcades, but don't quote me on that.
That would make sense.
Or no, it's I am too late, I think, is the other one on the barrel cannon.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, I, it's like something like that, like a funny little hidden message that's like, I'm too late, I'm going to die.
But then they opened up the trophy in Melee and they saw on the barrel it said, I am too late. And then the blood of Donkey Kong started pouring out of their GameCube and they went, ew.
And they closed the door. Yeah, so that's fun. I think the trophy gallery was just also fun to see, like, characters from games that didn't come out in America.
Yeah. The trophy gallery, so a lot of my memories are more tied to Brawl,
mm-hmm.
Because Brawl, A, it had a lot more single-player content, and I, at the time that I got it, did not have a sibling who really cared that much about video games, and B, it was also, I did not have a GameCube, like, I had a GameCube, but we ended up selling it at some point, and I didn't get a Wii until years later, and so, like, I had a lot of gap where I just could not play Melee. Melee is still fascinating to me on its own outside of Brawl because here's the thing about Brawl. The story itself contextualizes a lot. Like, mm-hmm. the Subspace Emissary, which is still, I would say, like, one of the most fun things in just a video game. I love the Subspace Emissary, but we're not talking about it today. Like, it contextualizes a lot that Melee doesn't have the context for. And so because of that, I feel like Melee has a vibe to it. You know, the menus, the trophy viewer, like, a lot of the options and stuff. It has that, you know, mid-2000s core aesthetic, like, paired with, I'm trying my hardest not to say the word liminal. I'm not going to say the word liminal in this episode. Just, you know, mixed with that, like, audioscape style, compared with also just some of the best music in the series to this date. It's so good. It excites the imagination in a way that's, you know, very childish wonder.
I also wanted to bring up some Easter eggs and glitches. Easter egg-wise, the biggest, funniest one is the extender for Samus, where you hold shield, you press A to do a shield grab, and before the tether beam comes out, the grapple beam, you press, I believe, up, down, up on the D-pad, and then you press A again. If you do it fast enough, the grapple beam will be way longer. You can only use it by shield grabbing instead of pressing Z until the end of the game, and you have to press A to manually grab the opponent when the tether is over them. However, it homes in on them, and it's super long. It's the funniest thing. It's a gimmick, and it's hilarious. As far as glitches go, Melee being a game that was made over the course of 13 months means that it has a lot of glitches. I mean, there's stuff like wave dashing, which isn't really a glitch, but people call it a glitch. There's glitchy terrain in levels like Pokemon Stadium, where people can just fall through the floor. Some characters have broken or non-existent hitboxes, but there's some really interesting glitches out there. And so some of my favorites, there's a really famous one where you play as Master Hand.
Yep.
I don't remember the exact steps to do it, but you can play as Master Hand in versus mode. It's essentially like it's trying to load character zero because you're not given a character, but you go into a match.
Yeah.
And the character zero is Master Hand in terms of the array of characters. My favorite glitch, though, is the black hole glitch. This was a common sight on YouTube, and as far as, like, video game glitches go when I was a kid, this is one I saw a lot.
Yeah.
Here's what you do. You take four players. Two of them have to be space animals, Fox or Falco.
Species, as they are known.
Mm-hmm. Then you need Ness, and usually Peach is the fourth one. You put the Ness on the same team as one of the space animals. You go to a stage with two platforms far apart from each other, the most common one being Hyrule Temple. There's the main platform everyone kind of starts on, and then the little pillar to the right of it. Then you get a Super Scope. You take the Super Scope, you press A five times, like tap, let go, which does 15 shots. You fire two charge shots from the Super Scope, and then you charge one more shot, but have another player attack them before you fire. That allows you to infinitely shoot the Super Scope. That's just another glitch. That's the infinite Super Scope glitch. It could also be an Easter egg. I have no clue. But you do that. Usually you give that to the Ness. Then you have the two spaces sit on either side of the gap, hold down B, and hold their shine, essentially. By the way, shine reflects projectiles, in case you didn't know. Just add that to the list.
Yep.
And then you have the one with the infinite super scope, just mash A to do a bunch of tiny shots. And they'll keep going and going and going, and then you'll have eventually a line of bullets between the two spaces. That's when you have the peach start throwing turnips in the middle, and the turnips will bounce off of the bullets. Because there's so many bullets, there's like always a hitbox, and so the turnips will keep bouncing off the bullets. And then if you throw in more turnips, you get more turnips bouncing off of other turnips.
That's more turnip per bullet.
And eventually, you get so many turnips and bullets that they all kind of coalesce into one circle of hitbox. And then you just have the nest throw like some PK flashes or PK fires.
For good measure.
I think the nest was the thing that you could just kind of replace with any other character. And you just have the biggest hitbox of all time. If you jump in it, it will damage you until you are at 999% and then spit you out instantly. It is a classic. It can also crash your game. It won't corrupt your data, but it can crash your game. It's very funny. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love weird little glitches.
Yeah. Melee, being a popular game, also had too many rumors.
Yes.
You ever heard of the turn your GameCube on for 24 hours to unlock Ganondorf one?
No, I actually haven't.
Don't do that at home, kids. It was a hoax.
It was a prank.
And then, of course, there was rumors to unlock, like, Sonic. Of course, Sonic, Snake, and, Sonic and Snake were planned, or, like, they were requested to be in Melee, but they didn't have enough time, so they put them in Brawl.
Yep.
You know, just any character. You'd see videos on YouTube of, like, how to unlock Toad in Mario Smash Brothers Melee.
First you have to play as Peach, and then you have Peach die.
It's always, like, the most ridiculous amount of steps. Like, beat event 100 times, yeah. Then beat adventure mode 100 times. Like, things that you can't possibly do with your time before realizing it's dumb and stupid.
Yeah. So, like, things that are almost explicitly designed to trick one poor kid who will waste, like, 5 afternoons not unlocking Wario.
There's also a lot of fun details and stages you can't see unless you move the camera while pausing, and that led to rumors. Like, in Hyrule Temple, the giant one, there's a little column vertical place where there's, like, a drop-through platform, and then another one, and then underneath that's the Rumble Cave. Don't ask why it's the Rumble Cave. If you know, you know.
The shit pit.
Yeah. And if you stand on that little platform in the middle and you pause, you can actually see that there's, like, a barred doorway on the other side, as if it's like a jail cell. So of course, whenever there's a jail cell in a Nintendo game, the next question is, who's in there? How do we get them out? As every jail in Nintendo games leads to rumors.
Tingle. Tingle is my, I'm gonna shoot my shot. Tingle, next game. Next Smash.
Tingle is in Great Bay, and you can pop the balloon, and that's pretty funny.
True. Top 10 Smash Brothers Melee secrets. Tingle is in the Great Bay.
There's also Cranky Kong in Congo Jungle, I believe, is the stage.
Yes.
The one with the house and the river. And if you can look in the house and see Cranky Kong. And then each of the Pokemon Stadium transformations has, like, Pokemon hidden around it.
Yep, yep.
It's a fun little scavenger hunt.
I believe Brawl is the one that added the cat. The cat that you can see.
Yeah, there's a cat on, like, an ice texture or a metal texture on the ice-type transformation on Brawl Pokemon Stadium.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
You got Pokefloats. That has a lot of Pokemon in it if you're looking really closely.
Yeah. You know, try to look very hard. You might miss it. I also have to shout out the houses in the Rainbow Cruise background.
I want to live there.
I don't. There's, like, nothing around there.
I've been to Kansas before. I could live it.
I don't want to go to Kansas either.
Well, it's a good thing we're not in Kansas anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're in Nintendo World. Obviously, Smash
Nintendo
Bros.
Nintendo Land. It was right there.
We're not in Nintendo Land, though.
Oh.
Smash Bros. Obviously has gone on to be a huge series and a competitive powerhouse. With memories for everyone of all ages and a big focus on unlockability and multiplayer ability and customization. And it's a rip-roaring time, and Nintendo is trying to kill the competitive scene.
Nintendo is trying their damnedest to get people to stop playing their games the way that they don't want them to. And also, I say nay.
Also, if you have a CRT, you could probably sell it for like $15 to $20 to a Smash player.
Yeah.
Don't use that exact price quote. Look up other prices from like the Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist or whatever you're on. But, yeah, you know, they're always looking for those CRT televisions, those cathode ray tubes.
Cathode R tube, is my favorite physicist. Yeah, Smash Melee is a, it's a rip-roaring good time, it's very fundamental, it's, like I said, I would still very much say that Melee's continued popularity is a big part why Smash is still around today, and in some ways, why Smash will probably still be around. There's no way they're not making a new one for the Switch 2 when it comes out.
There's no. Unless they just do, like, Smash Ultimate Deluxe.
I hope they don't.
I also want to just say, like, I don't actively play Melee. I play other fighting games. But I love watching Melee. Melee is, like, a game that I will actively tune into tournaments for over the weekends.
Yeah.
It's just fun to watch, and I like some of the players, and the storylines are cool, and it's fun to watch.
It's, yeah, like, I joked earlier, and I'm going to say it very, very briefly. There was very much a case where there were multiple high-profile examples of Melee players being very shitty.
It wasn't just Melee players. There were a lot of
fighting game Smash players.
Well, no, I mean, a lot of Smash 4 players
and
Ultimate players as well. Some of the more high-profile ones were Ultimate and Smash 4, with a few high-profile Melee as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, not going to delve too deep into it, but essentially, like, I feel like because of that, it's kind of become an easy punchline on the internet of, you know how Smash Bros. Players are.
But, like, the community dealt with that. All those people have been kicked out of the community.
That's the thing.
And there's been rules put in place since then to make it safer for people.
Like, that's the thing, is that, like, I'm not going to say the entire FGC is good. Like, the entire FGC is not 100% good or 100% bad. But, like, part of that whole process was that they got kicked out. Because the people who are here very much care about the game and the community.
Yeah.
I also will say that, like, Smash Melee players in general have, not helped by some of the higher profile ones, have, like, an air of snootiness about them.
Leffen's the one who's normally sort of a shithead. He also does play other fighting games, though.
Yeah, it's the thing about it is that, like, there will always be high profile assholes, but that should not stop you from enjoying the game and getting into the community. And, like, the fighting game community, especially nowadays, is what, like, this is one of the best times to get into it in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if you are interested in Melee, or at the very least interested in Smash, you should, you know, go get in touch with Discords and look up if there's, you know, anybody local to you or any local events happening.
And also, if you don't have any local events, try out Slippy. It is the, like, maybe the best fight netcode of any fighting game, any plat fighter at least. It's unofficial though, it's a mod.
That's the one that I assume like Melee Netplay essentially is mostly done through.
Yeah. It's really good.
Nice. Yeah, you should play games that are good, and a lot of the games we talk about are good. I would genuinely recommend, you know, digging up an old copy or digitizing an old copy through entirely legal means and playing it on an emulator if you can.
Mm-hmm. So that you can play Slippy.
Yep. Because you know, it is, like you said, the interesting thing with Melee to me personally is you're more into the player side directly. I am usually more into the technical aspect. I like, you know, learning specifically why a lot of these characters are good in this game and not good in this game. And it's an endless font of that because we're kind of constantly shaking it up. 20 eggs recently happened, of course. That was an entire thing of, you know, Yoshi 10th number 10 on the tier list winning because Amsa is a fucking cracked player.
Yeah.
And so it's like, that alone should show that, you know, it's not as static as people sort of assume it is. It's not, oh, Fox only, Final Destination, etc. It is a thriving ecosystem.
Yeah, or like how Captain Falcon has moments where it seems like nobody can win a game with him. Where, like, there's moments where it seems like Captain Falcon's just no longer good, and then every Falcon player suddenly shows up and does really well. S2J has somehow been playing since, like, the 2000s and is still one of the best Falcon players.
Based.
And regularly competes and holds his own. His name is, of course, short for Smoke Two Joints. We know that.
Nice. We support it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a joint positive episode.
I guess?
Anyway, speaking of joints, let's blow this one.
You can follow us on any podcasting platform you like. Give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know how bad this episode was. Let us know if there's anything you want to see us cover or just things you would think we might like. You can follow us on Twitter to get updates and teasers on upcoming episodes. We have the Net Surfies coming up. That won't really get a teaser unless we find a way to tease the winner of some sort of category. Which maybe we will. I'm thinking we might do a live stream to determine meme of the year.
Yep. That was fun last time. I liked it.
Yeah. And then also, if we do that, it'll probably be on my Twitch at twitch.tv/twack, twitch.tv/twak. I stream weekdays from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Schedule is kind of all over the place. But lately I've been streaming Shadow the Hedgehog while raising money for diabetes research, and I have to play through the game 3 more times!
Yay! Woo!
So that's been fun. You can also follow me on Twitter at Twackaroo for, just updates on things. A lot of pinball high score and personal best posting. So yeah, you can see what my Spotify Wrapped was.
Oh yeah, Spotify. Oh shit, we should have done it. Damn it!
We
should have done an episode on Spotify Wrapped. We're so bad about marketing and current SEOs and trends.
It's fine. Our next episode will be NetSurfer Wrapped.
Okay, good. Well, speaking of Wrapped, why don't we wrap this up? You can follow us... Wait, hang on. We're already in the outro. Hang on. Okay, so you say your... Right. So you can follow me on Twitter and TikTok at Galen Wilson. That's at GALENWILS0N. I post my hot takes and occasionally videos about important things or, you know, just things I'm thinking about. You can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube. And you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire. But probably follow Marissa first because I don't really stream that much.
Yeah, I stream regularly. I have a sub button. You can get an emote of me holding a stop sign like Jack Black.
Yeah, I only have a Dom button.